You're listening to Let's Get Legal, hosted by John Hanson and powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Today's show is sponsored by attorney Stephen A. Leahy from OPM Tax Advocates and attorney Michelle Pawlowski from Vogel Zhang Law. Now, here's John Hanson, and let's get legal.
In typical fashion, me and Stephen A. Leahy talking right up until I got to turn these microphones on. This time we were debating constitutional law and the ever-changing worlds of how we analyze our original document and how it changes.
Love the Constitution.
You love law, Stephen A. Leahy, don't you?
I really do.
Is that why you have more fun on this show than Hochberg? I heard you say that earlier.
I said I had fun on this show. I have fun on that show, too.
I agree. Oh, well, now you're switching your tune.
No, I said that, too, then.
Don't take it
But
back.
I do have fun here.
Well, I think that, you obviously have such a cool background. Your family is, small business is in your bones.
It is.
So is hard work. And
any business owner, you better have work in your bones, right?
Oh, yes.
As you are, right?
You so you're passionate about it.
You're not going to work. You don't work 40 hours.
No. Right?
You know, 8, 9 to 5. That's not a business owner's life.
No.
And if you want that life, then don't become a business owner because that's not the way it works.
When you were steel worker? No. Iron worker. Yes. I mess it up every time. Even when you were doing that laborious job, was law something always percolating in the back of your head? Were you interested in it as a kid?
You know, that's a very good question, and I don't know. When I start thinking about when I wanted to become an attorney, I don't know when that happened. I was always, even when I was an iron worker, I had my hot dog stand. I started a little hot dog stand.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, in the summer. I still have my little hot dog stand. And
you have a hot dog stand?
Yeah, it's a push cart. I use it for promotional now.
Oh, okay.
I use it for promotion for the law firm.
I thought you had a business still operating in the summer.
No, I don't.
I was like, is that tough, Stephen? Come on.
I give away hot dogs. Right. Like for Halloween, I give away 200 hot dogs. Been doing that for 20 years in my neighborhood. And so now it's so great to hear the kids when they come back. And or my favorite is when a 5 or 6 year old says, "I've been coming here my whole life."
Like you so can only remember a year, kid.
I just love that. So, but then a lot of the older kids come and they've been, you know, they come every Halloween and
right.
And that becomes a tradition and I love that. Love right. it. But the law firm.
Yeah, the question was about law, Stephen, and then you went on a diatribe about hot dogs.
But because that's what I'm saying. It's like it's always evolving, right? You always have to. What's next, right? I went to Loyola here and have a business degree, and when I finished and I was talking to a professor and he said, "You don't have to have an MBA because my goal. My dream was always owning my own business. That's really what my dream was." And so they said, "Well, you don't need an MBA because you already have a business degree. So you should probably go to law school," somebody suggested to me. And I thought, he said, "Well, you know, that's the only place where you're going to learn to think." Mm. And I thought, that's interesting, and I want to run my own business. So when I went to law school, becoming an attorney was not my goal. I wanted to run my own business. And we had a business, my brother, my dad, and I, we were doing a trade show business because as an iron worker, I worked at the trade shows a lot. And so we started a little trade show business. And so that was my goal. It only became later that when I got involved in law school and I went to law school for a long time because I was going at night.
Yeah. So wait, you were going to night while you were an iron worker?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
So, but that's when I fell in love with being an attorney, right? And not a lawyer, we always laugh. my family, because we're attorneys, we're not lawyers.
Right, right.
But that's when I fell in love with being the law and
the debate and the...
It's also counseling people. They call us counselors. That's really where I get my satisfaction is helping people. And I know it sounds kind of cliche-ish, but that's what lawyers do. Mm-hmm. Good lawyers do. Mm-hmm. Not all, you know, some don't, I would suspect, but most attorneys are out there trying to help people, and that's what I do. And so that's really where I get the, you know, and that's what the law is all about, right? Is trying to keep people, I had someone call today on David's show saying, you know, you're helping people avoid taxes. I'm really not.
Not at all.
People sometimes have trouble, and I'm helping them solve that problem that they have the way the law allows them to solve it.
Yes.
Right? It's not tax evasion. You go to jail for tax evasion.
That person wasn't listening a couple weeks ago when we made this very point that one of the reasons I have you help me out is because I trust that, one, you will try and find me every ounce that I'm entitled to save off my taxes. But two, you're going to do it in a professional way that's going to likely not get me audited because it's truthful and honest. Those two things are not competing things. In fact, a good attorney, tax attorney, combines both those desires.
Absolutely true. Absolutely. Very well put, John. And that's absolutely true. And again, you could take chances and you can do the, you know, there's, you could be very creative with the law, but then you're going to get yourself in trouble.
I got a question for you. And this is other lawyers who have come on the show, Patrick Dolan, Mike Leonard.
Whom I know, both of them.
Oh, they're great people. And everyone has a different background getting to law school and that journey. Go ahead.
Let me say one thing.
Yeah.
They should put a suit on when they come.
Why?
I'm just kidding, because you guys talked about that.
Because we talked about you last week. That's right. You texted me in the middle of the show after we made fun of you. Good callback, Stephen.
I listened to the show, John.
They both wore suits the first time they came on the program, and then they realized that I was in what I was in, which today I'm in jeans and a sweater. It's not too bad. Where was I going with that, Stephen?
I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
Oh, here's where I was going. We could, I think, benefit as a country from having as many lawyers as possible from all ideological and different backgrounds. You're someone that put yourself through law school through being an iron worker. I think the traditional path to law school for a lot of kids is, or young adults, is they leave their undergrad, they're perpetual students, they do 3 years of law school, and they enter this, and they, not to say that they didn't have any real world experience, but they missed what might be a broader scope of how everything works. Mm-hmm. Would you agree? And I think the tide has turned. I think the average age of entering law school is getting a little bit older. Sometimes you're getting people that go into the workforce for a couple years first. I think that's a good thing for our legal system, that we get as many people from as broad a different backgrounds as we can into law.
When I went to law school, I went to night school at John Marshall, which is UIC now.
Mm-hmm.
At night school, almost my whole class was older people. I was older.
Yeah.
You know, so almost all, we had several doctors, police officers, a lot of working people who went to law school. So even back then, it may be that it's now, I also have to say, I have two sons who went to law school, and they didn't come right out of, I'm trying to think if they came right out of undergrad and went into law school right away, but pretty much.
There's nothing wrong with that.
No, I'm just saying, I understand it, and I don't think there is anything wrong with it, but there is something to say about having a seasoned, a different view of that. Now, I hope that I shared that view with my kids when they were growing up, so they have a view of that too.
I guess what I mean is, if I'm a small business owner, I want someone who's been a small business owner.
I agree.
I want someone that has had a family background maybe in small business. You mentioned that you, your dad, and your brother had a trade business. You've had a hot dog stand. You understand the trials and tribulations, the ups and downs of a small business owner. And I think that when you talk to your clients, you bring a little of that psychological background to that job.
I hope so.
Yeah, you do. So. You get it.
And again, that's the whole thing is, you know, it's, as we talked about, it's not easy being a business owner. You have to love it. Otherwise, you can't do it if you don't really want to do it and love it. Right. And that's part of it.
Got a couple texts, by the way, for advice, or the one thing you wish you knew before you became a parent, for me. 847 says you only have them for a while, then they're gone. Oh, my goodness. That's true. In terms of
faster than you think.
That's what I hear. John, how to be a parent doesn't come with a handbook. Just use your common sense.
Here's what I would say for me, what I learned. You learned how much your parents love you.
Whoa. That was deep.
Yeah, that's true.
You learn a little bit more of looking up a generation from when you look down a generation.
Why they did that. Why did my parents do all the things they did for me?
You're going to make me cry, Stephen.
Yeah, I know. Me too.
Well, then let's take a break. Stephen and I are going to sob a little bit. Get your questions on in. 312-981-7200. Any other comments you have about that? That was brilliant, Stephen A. Leahy. If someone's running out, they were so touched by that moment. Fightbacknow.com is where people can go. Oh, Stephen, we'll take a quick break here on WGN. Stephen, the 773 tells me, never try to reason with a toddler.
It's true, too.
That's going to be hard for me. I like to debate and like discuss things and try and reach common sense solutions.
I think that makes sense. And I think I always tried that with my kids, and just talk to them like they're people.
Yeah.
You know, not like, you know, I think too many people talk down to their kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just talk to them. Yeah. They're just like you.
312-981-7200. If you have any tax questions or small business questions for Mr. Stephen A. Leahy, the 773 wants to know, how far back can the IRS look back at my tax record? I don't know if I did anything squirrely, but I'm not certain I didn't. Ooh.
Well, here's the this is a very good question because, and this is the legal answer, it depends, right? It depends what you're talking about. How long can they go back? Technically, they go back forever, right? If I haven't filed my taxes in 20 years, technically they can go back for 20 years, but they don't. Mm-hmm. Right? Generally, they'll go back 6 years. And if you filed the last, so I have people come to me, haven't filed in 10 years or more. And this is, it's more common than people think. And again, these aren't evil people.
No.
Actually, you kind of feel for them because they've been carrying this anguish for all these years. And that's the truth that people say, well, they're just cheating. They carry it with them, and it bothers them every day of their life. I always tell people they forget about it all day, but they can't stop thinking about it all night. Yep. And so they haven't had a good night's sleep in 10 years. And that I wouldn't wish that on anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so when they come, and one of the reasons why they kind of get paralyzed is because they don't know the answer to this, that you don't have to go back 20 years. Oh, 6 years is more manageable.
Mm-hmm.
I might be able to do that.
Right.
And so then I can go back, and if I file the last 6 years of your tax returns, the IRS will say you're in compliance. And if you're in compliance, then we can come up with an agreement with the IRS.
Is it better for someone to reach out to you before the IRS reaches out to them, or should they wait until the IRS reaches out to them to reach out to you?
Well, the answer is it's always better to be proactive. The reality is most people will wait till the IRS contacts them, because you're trying not to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
As I mentioned, you don't want to think about it all day, but you can't stop thinking about it all night. So all day you're not thinking about it until you get the letter. Now, you're going to get a lot of letters, and this is what happens with another thing that people with IRS problems know. You get a lot of letters from the IRS, and I think sometimes they send you so many just to get you in this mode, like, oh, there's just another letter. It's just another letter.
Oh, and so they don't, think one or two really strong ones would do the trick.
People stop opening them because it's just another, and they don't want to be reminded of it. They don't want to. So I can't tell you how many people come to my office, and either they come with these unopened, all these letters that are unopened, or they're open and they admit to me on the way there they opened it, you know, so they opened them up.
They didn't want to look like they weren't caring.
Yes, but what happens is the IRS kind of inundates you with this, and then when the real one, what I call the drop dead letter, comes, you don't open it. And so now you're in trouble. Now they're going to start levying you. And when I say trouble, because people ask me all the time, am I going to go to prison? Usually the answer is no, you're not going to go to prison. But what they'll do is they'll start levying you, and when they start taking things away from you, this gets to be a problem.
We got a phone question from Susan, then a text I want to get to about how you characterize the IRS, and I'm going to come to your defense. But let's go to Susan first. Hi, Susan. You're on WGN. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing great. What's your question?
Yeah, since 2018, I've had to pay estimated taxes as well as regular taxes. I never used to have to do this, and I was trying to figure out why.
Did you 1 year owe a bunch of money to the government by surprise? Do you usually owe?
Let's say out of the last 20 years or so, I think it was only 1 year I did owe it, but I always pay it on time.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. You don't have to pay estimated taxes, but if you don't, you're going to pay a penalty. Right. So you will pay. It's just when you're going to pay. And so it sounds like you have other income coming from other than a job, or you're in business for yourself or something like that. These are the people that have to pay estimated taxes, because they're not. If I'm a W-2 employee, then my job is taking the money out of my paycheck, and that should be enough to cover my taxes. That's why people get a refund. Right. And so if I have two jobs, they're neither one is kind of anticipating the other one. So they're not taking enough money out. So when I file my tax return, I owe money. And so if I owe money at the end of the year, then the IRS, because we're on a pay as you go program, and the IRS wants their money as soon as you make it. So that's why you have to start paying estimated taxes.
Right. If you got money, Susan, in January and February, if you didn't pay estimated taxes, you'd owe the government money, and they'd say, well, look, you were supposed to pay us in January and February for that revenue you had coming in. Since you didn't, we're going to charge you interest on that. Does that kind of make sense? The estimated taxes keep you kind of more in compliance and keep out that extra little tax that you're going to pay on top.
Well, I am retired.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have any money taken out that way. But I guess what I'm trying to figure out, as I say, I heard what you said, but somehow it's still not making sense. If I pay my both federal and state taxes every year on time, what I'm supposed to pay, why should I have to pay estimated as well? That's the part that just doesn't make sense to me.
We got a little time after the news, Susan. That's when we're going to explain it, because I got to hit it. Hang on the line, though. We're going to answer this question, because it is a complicated one to understand, especially when we don't have a giant whiteboard where we can kind of map it out for people. Susan, I know other people have that question. I had the exact same question a couple years ago. We'll explain it again after this news break on WGN. WGN, we have Stephen A. Leahy. He's in chair number three today. Mic number three. Nobody's in mic two. Stephen, you always like that spot right there, though.
I don't know why that is, because we have this conversation.
Yeah. Right. But then you block my view of Iridian. So, hi, Iridian. I didn't even get a chance to say hi to my wonderful producer. She produced
Home Sweet Home.
She's doing double duty, and she is so ready to get out of here and get her Starbucks and earn that. But she's taking your calls. She'll put you on hold like she did with Susan. Susan, you're still there, right?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so we're going to try and explain this, because what Susan is going through is what a lot of people go through. They find out at the end of the year they owe the federal government money. So they pay it, right? Because Susan's a good citizen. And then what she does then is make quarterly payments, you know, the subsequent year. And she's wondering, why would I do that? I pay them in full every year. Why am I making quarterly payments as well? First of all, it sounds like she needs to up her quarterly payments if she's continuing to owe the IRS. But can you just explain the system from like a, what do you mean by pay as you go, Stephen A. Leahy?
Well, that's why we have, they withdraw from your right? If I'm a W-2 employee, they take money out every paycheck and they take it and they give it to the IRS. So the IRS is a pay as you go. We have a pay as you go tax system. Means today, if I get money today, I owe it today.
Yes.
I don't owe it at the end of the year. I don't owe it in April. I owe it now. The government wants the money now.
Even though the tax season comes once a year.
Yes.
The government assumes and wants you to have paid your January income in January or by the end of the quarter.
Yes, exactly.
So whatever you made January, February, March, you should be paying taxes. Now, if you have a W-2 job, they're already doing that for you. Yeah. If you have other income coming in, the government wants you to pay it as they go, because they want that money now, because they invest that
money.
That's
exactly right. And they're gonna they need the money now.
And they boy, do they?
Exactly.
So what Susan is having happening, she's in kind of a loop here.
Mm-hmm.
She's paying quarterly estimated taxes, which is great. Good for you. But if she still owes money at the end of the year, she may not be paying enough of them, right?
Well, she's probably when you file your tax return, you get these vouchers, and it tells you what to pay in your estimated taxes.
Oh, right.
Right. So that, and if your income isn't changing, well, then you shouldn't owe any money at the end, or very little if you owe anything.
Susan,
a refund.
Susan, are you getting more and more money each year? Good for you if you are.
It changes from year to year due to investments and what I get from that.
Exactly.
And I have an accountant who does my taxes, and I wind up, instead of paying quarterly, pay enough to take care of the whole year so I don't have to write checks every few months.
But what's happening is you're paying a penalty that you're not even aware of, or really just interest on the money that you're supposed to pay estimated. They call it a penalty, but it really is just interest that you're paying on the money that you should have paid in January, February, March, or really March, because it's the first quarter, right? Then so if I wait till the end of the year to pay what I owe, like you just said, I pay my taxes in April, but that's for the year before.
There's nothing elite. Yeah. Go ahead.
Steven?
Yes, ma'am.
I also pay my estimated taxes in April for the entire year.
Oh, you pay it for the entire year.
You prepay your taxes. That makes sense. You could do that, and then you shouldn't owe anything at the end of the year. Then you don't have to make estimated taxes because you already have.
But if she does owe at the end of the year, it's probably because she made more than she estimated she would make.
Exactly.
It's like
exactly.
A good problem to have, Susan.
Yeah, I agree with that.
It is complicated, though. And it's kind of frustrating because you're...
So I get what she's saying. See, if I get vouchers and it says I have to pay $1,000 a quarter, for instance,
that's
$4,000. So I just write them a check now for $4,000, and then I don't have to pay them at the end of the year. That makes sense. And they're happy with that.
Oh, they'll take
it. They're getting it up front.
Yeah. Go ahead, Susan.
Well, all I was going to say is I don't understand... I hear what you're saying, but it seems to me that the government is investing it rather than allowing me to invest my own money.
Well, then that's the big debate. You're not doing anything illegal by paying them the interest at the end of the year if you owed money. You could.
No, I don't pay any interest at the end of the year.
Okay. Well, I guess this is a personal question for each individual person. Do you want to pay the government ahead of time and not have to pay interest at the end of the year or pay a quote-unquote penalty and instead invest that money yourself? You can do that. You're not out of compliance, right? You're just paying the government the interest that
you could do that.
that they are quote-unquote entitled to. It's the same question of, like, do you want a refund at the end of every year? Some people say, yes, I love that check. Well, guess what? You just gave the government an interest-free loan for the entire year to use as they want, and now you get a refund, but you could have had some of that money way earlier. It's just a matter of, do you want to owe more or not?
It's a personal preference.
It's a personal preference at the end of the day. It's a complicated issue, Susan. You can follow up with Stephen A. Leahy. How can anyone reach you, Stephen?
Happy to answer your questions. 312-664-6649. You said you have an accountant. Talk to your accountant.
Yeah. Right?
He can help you.
Yeah, and but yeah, tell them to bring the whiteboard.
But I'm always happy to answer questions.
You are the nicest guy. Let's go to Patrick Dolan just texted me. Steven's such a nice guy. I love listening to him. Let's go to Bonnie. Bonnie, you got a kind of a general question?
Yes, I do. I've been a food service worker for about going on 27 years. My family, union workers, hardworking American citizens, and it just doesn't seem like why our feet are held to the fire to pay taxes when we do. We try to work hard, pay our bills, do everything on time, and we're not to try to talk to people, let them know ahead of time we're having a hard time. And politicians or corporations are given every chance to extend, and things are looked the other way. It just doesn't seem like, and the way the IRS is going now with the unfortunate person we have in the White House, things
that's
just
Bonnie's opinion
are going to be so upsetting, you know.
Yeah. Bonnie, I think you're kind of asking, too, the general question that sometimes people have. Why is your tax rate, your effective tax rate, maybe you and your family pay 27% or 26%. I don't know if it's that high. Maybe it's 20%. Whereas some corporations pay 3% when it all comes down to it. That's a good question. Stephen, how do you answer that? There's a lot of different interesting nuggets in
there. That's a political question, though, right? That's why we have a 7,000-page tax code, right? Because people pay people to put things in the tax code that benefit them, and working people don't have anybody to put the except for their representative, who doesn't always seem to represent us. That's just a fact. And again, corporations, whether they pay taxes in the end or not is a question, because they just pass it on to the people anyway. So you pay the corporations never really pay the tax anyway. But now, having said that, they still pay taxes in payroll taxes and in property taxes. So they pay plenty of taxes. Do I think that people are overtaxed? Yes, I think people are overtaxed. That's just me.
I think it's also hard because we hear numbers sometimes like, oh, corporations paid, you know, not 2%. In taxes, their effective tax rate. Sometimes it helps to open up the hood underneath, like you're saying. There's payroll taxes in there. I'm not trying to make excuses for this. It's sometimes more complicated. Or sometimes a big business will invest so much money in their research and development, and some of that might be tax deductible.
Those are tax credits.
Tax credits. So it lowers their effective tax rate. Just like you or I, listeners, can lower our effective tax rates by putting into an HSA, other things like that.
Depreciation is another big thing for corporations.
Exactly.
That they buy things and then it's depreciated over time.
So sometimes the argument is a little overly simplified by saying, look at how the percentage that teachers and firefighters pay versus what corporations pay. And I'm not saying it's an illegitimate argument. There's a lot of great points to be made. It's just maybe not so simple as just looking at two individual percentage numbers and going, well, what the heck's that all about?
I agree.
But it's a great point, Bonnie, and I feel you, and I think Steven does too.
Yep.
Okay, let's go to Bob on line four. Hi, Bob. You're on WGN. Bobby?
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
How are you? What do you got
for
us?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. Go ahead.
Quick question following up on the estimated tax. So I have restricted stock units that I've been fortunate to get from my company, and at the end of the year, I end up owing quite a bit of money based on the increase in value in that stock. What should I be doing when I liquidate those shares or after several years?
I know you're not a CPA, Stephen, but
no,
generally
not.
Speaking on those thoughts.
And I'm not sure about what, generally you only pay tax on stock when you sell it, generally. Now, if you're getting it as income, like he's from his company, right, then it's based on what the value is when you get it. And the longer you hold it, right? You only pay tax when you sell it on capital gains.
Capital gains, right?
You might pay ordinary income from the value of that stock when they're giving it to you as for your job, but then you only pay capital gains on it when you sell it. I don't know if that's what the answer you were looking for.
Right. And I, Bob, you got an accountant by any chance or no? Do you just use a general tax firm or something?
No, I just use TurboTax and kind of do it.
Yeah. I would reach out to someone to maybe explain that a little bit more. Not that Stephen doesn't know things about that, but you're a lawyer. I mean, you can call the office.
Yeah, you call my office. I have CPA and enrolled agents and other people who prepare taxes. I don't generally prepare taxes, but I have people in my office that do.
I've interacted with some of them. Very good people. Mm-hmm. Bob, let's get Stephen. What's your number?
312-664-6649. Always happy to answer your questions or put you in touch with someone who can.
And the website?
Go to fightbacknow.com.
Let's go to Gene on line three for a palate cleanser. Gene, you got some advice for me before I make a big journey?
I sure do. Two things quickly. One is don't ever take advice and follow it to the letter without thinking it through.
Okay.
Back when, in the 70s, when my children were born, they said insisted babies be put on their stomachs.
Yeah.
And I thought, no, these are healthy big boys. If they throw up, they could
asphyxiate,
suffocate. And I didn't want to put them on their backs either. So you might have to ask your mother about it. But there were things in back in the day called receiving blankets.
Huh.
You roll them up because they're very soft and they're very thin. And you place the baby, use them rolled up behind the baby's back so that they can sleep on their sides.
Interesting. I've seen a little of that on Instagram too, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Occasionally they will roll over on their backs, but according to today's things, it's okay.
So you're saying trust your instincts.
Yes. And if they're hungry, if they cry and can't be consoled, offer them food. Scheduling is ridiculous.
Okay.
And it affected, thank God, my grandchild suffered through it, but he was hungry and they didn't know it, and the pediatrician had no children and she didn't know it either.
So they were trying to stick to the schedule instead of just listening to the cues of the kid. Yeah. You know, appreciate...
And if your partner doesn't like it, it could be a problem. But baby talk, children, they know that even animals respond to baby talk.
Oh, I'll be talking.
Because you can make it silly. You can give them funny names that rhyme with their real name.
Okay.
And you can talk, and the way the sing-songy way baby comes out soothes them, that you talk to the baby when it comes out of your mouth, it soothes them.
Gene, I'm going to call you. Are you up in the middle of the night? Can I call you when I need some extra advice?
I am up in the middle of the night.
I got to go to this commercial break, but thank you, Gene, for the phone call.
Thank you for taking my call. I really, really wanted to tell you that.
Oh, thank you. I love that. Okay, I'll look into all those things. A couple of minutes left with Stephen A. Leahy. Well, hold on. I didn't turn on your mic yet. Go ahead now.
I said never enough time.
Especially when we waste time me not turning on your mic. I'll get to Kathy in one moment. Hang on the line, Kathy. I want to leave people with a couple quick deadlines. If you have an S-Corp, you need to be filing your taxes soon.
March 15th.
That's a quick deadline. Then you do the personals after that. When you
April
find out
15th.
How much, exactly. Yep. What about this FINSA thing you've been telling? Is it FINSA? Am I saying that right?
Yeah, FinCEN, which FinCEN. is the financial security. But what it is, I'm talking about the beneficial ownership interest report, which is required for smaller businesses. And we talked a little bit about that. Mm-hmm. But it was on again, off again, on again, off again. Now it's back on, and they put the deadline now at March 21st. So if you own a business, LLC, or subchapter S, or even a C corp, and you have not filed it, file it. It's fairly simple to do, and the penalties are outrageous. So will they actually penalize people? I'm going to guess that they're going to. So I would say to you, follow the rules. It's like it or not, file it. We don't like to pay taxes, but we do it because that's the requirement. Same thing here. File the report. It's just telling them who owns the company.
Got a specific question about what's deductible or not, which I know you have a team that helps you out with that. But 6-year-old says, my brother is still paying a Parent Plus loan. He got a $40,000 check, though, apparently because of some of the adjustments that have been made with income and all that sort of stuff. Is that taxable, a student relief check?
Refund?
Refund check. Or I don't know what it is. I guess that's what it depends.
I guess it would depend on whether you deducted it.
Right.
If you've deducted it over the years and then you get the money back, that's generally taxable, right? And that's just the way things work. Because I took it out, because I got to take it out of my income and I didn't have to pay taxes on it. If I get it back now, then I'm going to have to pay taxes on it because you have to pay taxes on income.
Wouldn't the government send a 1099 along with that if that was the case, if it was taxable?
If it's the government sending you back the money, I guess. Even if it isn't, you should get a 1099.
And either way, they should call your office if they don't have someone to talk to.
And I'm not sure exactly what this is, but I'd be happy to answer that question. I don't want to say him because as an attorney, you can't be an expert on anything.
Right.
But 1099s happen to be my thing.
Yes.
You know, and I do a lot of continuing education for tax professionals and attorneys about 1099s.
How many are there?
They're 22 to 23. Depends on how you categorize them. But there's a lot of them.
You should make a song about to explain each one.
I have a book coming out about it, so we'll have to
turn that into a song. You know, like when you memorize the state the state capitals or something.
I had a friend that had that song, but I never got that song.
1099 NEC is for non-employee commission, something like that, you know. I'll help you write that.
Now I might do it.
Yeah, well, you gotta pay me, but and then you can do my taxes on the income you give me. Let's go to Kathy really quickly. I've been soliciting. This will be my last show for a while. Things to remember or interesting stuff. Kathy, we got about a minute before the news. What do you have for us?
Okay. You need to get a multi-pack of MAMS, those pacifiers.
Uh-huh.
It's sort of been my signature gift for baby showers. I give a package of that and a gift card to Amazon or somewhere that they go to buy diapers. Because I think that's like the most important thing. But the mammogram,
the pacifier.
Pacifiers are like a godsend. They used to discourage it because they said kids are going to get used to it. But I'll tell you, if they're crying in the middle of the night, you stick that in their mouth.
That's what my mom said. That was the first thing. My mom said.
And I found one in the cushion of a couch when I was giving the couch away. And my son is now going to be 39.
Oh, my goodness. Clean out those cushions, Kathy. That's impressive in many ways. Thanks for the phone call, Kathy. Appreciate it.
Bye.
Stephen A. Leahy, how can people reach you again?
Well, if you own a business, you should be on my daily email. Like, everybody can't afford a lawyer, so maybe you just need some information. So sign up for my daily email. Go to fightbacknow.com. It's free.
Stephen, we'll talk soon, okay?
Thanks so much, John.
You have two boys, right?
I do.
So you'll be taking my calls in the middle of the night?
I will take your calls. I'm up most of the time.
I love you, Stephen. We'll talk soon. Let's take a break. We got news coming up from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.